This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Baseball 20, the award-winning baseball strategy game available now for the off-season price of just $19.99. It is now 50% off for the baseball off-season, just $19.99. You can get it directly from us at ootpdevelopments.com. You can get it on Steam. You can get it through EA's Origin. And if you're an Origin Access or Origin Access Premier subscriber, it is part of those services. Out of the Park Baseball 20 is the best version of the award-winning baseball strategy series that we've ever made and is available now for just $19.99 on PC and Mac. Enjoy the show. I am so happy to be here because it is time for what is our tradition here at the Press Row Podcast, which is our Racing Game of the Year show. And not only is today the Racing Game of the Year show for 2019, it's also the Racing Game of the Decade show, a combo. And there is no better group of people to have it with than the three people I'm delighted to have with me tonight, starting with, you know him very well, one of the official racing correspondents of the Press Row Podcast from the best show on the internet, the Player One Podcast, Mr. Greg Seward. Greg, how are you, sir?
I'm excellent. Rich, how are you? How was your New Year's?
It was great. It was great. How about yours?
It was excellent. It was chill. I was just sort of sat with my kids and watched movies. I made my kids watch Field of Dreams.
That is a wonderful thing. That movie is awesome. And it's I haven't seen it in a while. I need to rewatch that.
It's so good. Although my 12-year-old the whole time just kept saying, I don't get it. Well, I don't get it. I'm that. Like, well, you're out of the will. So get that.
All right. Very good. Up next from the Dodcast and and many other places, another official racing correspondent of the Press Row Podcast, Mr. Pete Dodd. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Rich. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
I am delighted to have you on as well. And of course, from Australia, our good friend, Dr. Ken. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are everybody out on the internet land?
We are thinking of you and your nation, sir.
Yeah.
Very much so.
It's tough times at the moment down here. And we'll get through it. But yeah, a lot of people are doing it tough at the moment down here with all the forest fires.
So you are on our minds, and we are glad to have you on, and we are glad that you're safe where you are. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
All right, gentlemen, we've got a lot of work to do, so let's just get to it. Here's what we're doing, folks. First, we're going 3-2-1 with these fine gentlemen on their 2019 Racing Game of the Year, and then boom, we're turning it right around, going 5-4-3-2-1 with their racing games of the decade. This is going to be great. So let's just jump into it. Dr. Ken, your number three game of 2019, racing game.
Okay, my number three racing game of the year for 2019 is an entry that I'm sure everyone will not have on their list, but it is FIA Truck Racing 2019. I may be one of 30 to 40 people in the world, including the development team that played this game.
What did you play it on? Is it PC, I presume?
Yeah, I played it on the Xbox One. I'm not sure what other platforms is available. It's certainly PS4. I think it is available on Switch and PC for that matter as well. It is what it is. It is a truck racing game. So particularly in Europe and and also in Australia, there is a racing discipline that involves racing big rigs. So these are heavily modified trucks, and you race on F1 circuits and on touring car circuits. And this sport this game is actually a fairly faithful recreation of that very niche form of motor racing. It doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles to it. The actual trucks themselves are actually really well modeled, and they look great on track. In terms of the career mode, it's very, very, very bare bones. But I found myself actually really, really enjoying this. It's a team I think that's done a lot of the some motorbike games in the past as well. And in terms of actual online racing, it's different. It doesn't feel like driving a car, obviously. The trucks are incredibly weighty. You need to be very, very careful when you're on the hitting the gas because they become very, very fishy very quickly. And oddly enough, the trucks themselves actually have 8 gears, but you only use
like
2 of them.
Car. Oh.
Yeah, but you only use 2 of them when you're actually racing. You start in 7th gear. And then at various times move up to 8th gear. There's none of the other gears are used because you'd simply just wheel spin the truck. So a weird little game. I don't know whether we'll ever see a sequel, but it's actually really, really good fun.
That's I want to say you mentioned this in a previous conversation that we were having when we were planning this show, and I meant to go look it up because this is one of those, yeah, it's one of those series that kind of sits outside the mainstream a little bit, but I've always been fascinated by it. And I've played, they've been making these truck racing games for years, not necessarily this company, but, you know, I own a couple of them on different consoles as well. And anyone who hasn't watched these, like, go look up some video because they're pretty awesome. Those races are pretty great. I mean, these guys do not spare the chrome horn when they're driving these things around. Like, they really beat and bang these things to death if they have to. And it's amazing to see something that big going that fast.
Yeah, I mean, you're racing them around. For example, the Nürburgring F1 circuit, which now the start of that lap involves, you know,
a very tight right-hander,
a corkscrew of tight corners.
Yeah,
and negotiating, you know, 15 trucks through that space is good fun. So yeah,
wow, that is not where I thought we were going to start, but that is fantastic. I love it. Hey, Greg.
Yeah.
What's your number 3 for racing game for 2019?
FIA European Truck Racing Championship. No. It's a Wreckfest by Bugbear. Which of course is basically the spiritual successor to their Flat Out series from the original Xbox and through the years since then. This is a game that I didn't grab right away, but found cheap later in the year. And turn it on and was immediately hooked. I spent a lot of my year playing, you know, NASCAR and F1, and I love that type of racing. I love serious racing, you know, playing rally games and stuff like that. But every now and then you get the itch to go back to something like a Flat Out or a Destruction Derby, and Wreckfest is that. And it is that for a modern console, for modern games, where you just beat and bang these old stock cars for the most part around crazy tracks with like figure eights and head on. Like one of the tracks that I was on the other day is actually partially an asphalt oval, but at each turn it actually turns back on itself. So you're driving head on into traffic going the other direction and you have to survive like 5 laps of that. And then with this game also, and so of course the wrecking is loads of fun. The car's falling apart by the end of every race and it looks great. But then on top of that, they threw in a bunch of really crazy events in this game as well, like lawnmower racing, or where you're on like a figure eight track with 20 other lawnmowers and a thresher chasing you at the same time, or a figure eight race where everyone's driving motorized sofas. So it's insane, but it's so much fun and it's so easy to pick up and play for like 10 minutes. The physics are not realistic. They're just easy to learn and easy to handle. And you can just go cause some carnage and have loads of fun with it. So I wasn't expecting it to rank so highly on my list for the year, but, it's just a really nice change of pace and it's a really nice throwback to, like I say, something like a Destruction Derby on the PlayStation 1. So Wreckfest for me.
Fantastic. Pete Dodd, what's your number 3, sir?
My number 3 is Grid, which I have only had for about a week now, which I actually got because of conversations about making this podcast and because it went on a very deep sale. And it just came out like 2 months ago, 3 months ago, tops, I think. I think it was actually like November, maybe October. And before I even get into that, though, I feel like this is like it was $19 also instead of being $60. Like it's already taken a massive dip. And I think it's kind of says a lot about where we are with racing games right now. Like this year was not good. I feel like for the last few years that we've been having this podcast, we keep talking about like how it feels like racing games, like the niche stuff is doing really well. And there's a lot of like niche titles that are amazing, but like racing games as like a mainstream thing has definitely sort of fallen to the wayside. So I actually looked it up online, and on November 22nd, 1963, JFK was assassinated. And that was also the day the first Forza ever came out. And every year since then, there has been anywhere from 1 to 47 Forzas released every year. And we didn't even get a Forza in 2019. That's how down of a year it's been that we didn't even get a Forza.
Now, we know they're saving Forza for the launch of the next Microsoft
Forza
console.
Comes out every year. I mean, they could have had it come out this year and come out. I mean, obviously, yeah, they're putting an extra year of work into it, so it's one of the better ones
launch. New hardware.
Right.
This is a big deal for them.
I get that, but at the same time, it's just... Now, shows where we are with racing games right now, and like and how quickly everything, like, I mean, a $60 game, it was less than $20 on sale like before New Year, that came out in the fall. Like, it's just not great for the health of the bigger racing
games.
You
know, it's funny, and I'm sorry to interrupt, my apologies, but it's funny because you could literally listen to each. We do this show every year. We've done it every year for at least 6 or 7 years, right? Like the Racing Game of the Year show. And you can almost, it's like a roller coaster. It almost feels like every year there is either like, it's back. We're back, baby. We're drowning in all sorts of great stuff. It's amazing. Or it's what happened to this genre? What's going on here?
Right.
It feels like we're closer to that than the former.
Well, I feel like that's a big part of that is because there's two different things happening, one good, one bad. Like, the good thing is that niche racing games are becoming massive. I mean, we have a number 3 on here that's semis racing, you know, like that's amazing. And that's the indie scene, especially in the PC, but it's easier to get on consoles than ever. So those games are even coming to consoles and whatnot. Like, all of that stuff is doing really, really, really well. The Need for Speeds, the Grids, the all of those games, the even the Forzas and Gran Turismos, like, they just have shrinking and shrinking sales all the time, and it's so that's the bad.
I think you have a point there. I mean, especially when we're at the end of a console generation, that's when the niche stuff does start to rise to the top, because a lot of the big guns are being held for the next generation.
Right. But yeah, so Grid's okay. I don't love it. It kind of feels like it almost feels like a remake of the Grid of the Grid that came out. What was it, like 8 or 9 years ago now? I'm not even entirely sure. I should have looked that up. But like it feels like a game that old. It's pretty. It looks nice. I don't mean it in terms of that, but like the career thing, which is actually kind of refreshing after playing games like Forza, which is just a map filled with too much stuff to do. But the career is just a list. It's just like, do this, do these races, do this, do these races, do this, do these races. There is like a leveling up system and that type of stuff that can be slightly addictive, but for the most part, it's just going through a list and get in the top 3 in all of them, and then you get and you'll get through it all. One interesting thing that they're doing, though, is that they're doing sort of like live seasons that you can buy into, which, like, so you drop $10 and you get an entire season, which is like something like 30 or 40 events. It has new tracks, it has new cars, and it's their way of sort of keeping it fresh. Getting new tracks and getting new cars and stuff like that isn't new to racing games, but the way that they're sort of tying it into a season and having it be like it's its own sort of like module in the game. It's like, if you want to do season 1, you go buy this, and then eventually there'll be a season 2, I assume.
Kind of like the Fortnite thing.
Yeah, exactly. It feels very Fortnite-esque. It's almost like a battle pass. But it's interesting. I don't think I'm going to buy it because there's like, I don't know, there's a couple hundred races that come with the stock game that I bought, and I don't know that I'm going to get through all of those to the point where I'm going to want those. We're going to want extra, but like for people who get into it, it's cool to have this game that like is just going to constantly be getting new stuff, at least for its first year. The racing itself is not good enough. Unfortunately, the grid games have always been sort of simcade with a little bit more cade than sim. And it just doesn't, the cars don't feel like they have a ton of weight to them. It's not electric enough to feel like an arcade game. It doesn't have enough weight to it to feel like a sim game. It's just somewhere in between. So it doesn't feel great, but it doesn't feel awful either. But yeah, it's a decent game, and that's kind of how sad this year is for me, that it like a decent game's in at number three.
All right, well, Pete, let's keep this going fantasy football snake draft style. Let's hear what your number two is for 2019.
My number two is Wreckfest.
There you go. I saw you practicing up on Steam just before we started recording.
I was. Because all of the Wreckfest that I played, and this is what I have to add to what Stuart was saying, all the Wreckfest that I had played this year had been online, and it's so fun online, and it like because I love Destruction Derby on the PlayStation 1. That's like one of my all time favorites, and the idea of playing that online then to like it was like a dream. So like the being able to do that now is incredible. And I love the online, and I was like, before the show started, I was like, I should at least check out the career and see if it's okay. And it's fine. It's the same thing as grid is. It's like, here's a list of races, go do them. It's such a blast. So, I mean, I echo everything that Seward said, and I'll say if you have friends to play with online, it's like a definite no-brainer. It's so, like, you just laugh hysterically the entire time. Such insane things happen because of the physics. And it's just a ton of fun.
Nice. Love it. Thank you. Greg, back to you for your number two racing game for the year 2019.
My number two racing game for 2019 is Motorsport Manager on the Switch. Because I called this my favorite mobile game when the first one came out on mobile, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago at this point. I've always been interested in management sims. I think, Rich, you know a little bit about management sims. But
have I mentioned a couple games to you? You want me to chat about that for a little while?
I get into hockey management sims. But,
yes, you do.
Always, have wanted to get into a motorsport one because motorsport is where my heart is. And when the Motorsport Manager came out on mobile years back, I loved it because it had enough depth to it that it kept me engaged, but it wasn't so overwhelming that it was hard to play on a mobile device. You know what I mean? I wasn't trying to navigate tons of spreadsheets with my fat little fingers on a tiny little screen. But basically, Motorsport Manager on Switch is, I believe, more or less Motorsport Manager 2, which was out on Steam and mobile as well. And I've been playing it all year. I haven't quite... My team has not won the final championship yet. But it's so engaging and so easy to pick up. I love the... I love how deep you can go with it. And you don't have to, but... You know, I love hiring and firing better engineers and better strategists. I love sort of the flow of bringing in training young driver for a year and then hiring to the team. And then, you know, you sort of have a year where you can build their skills and you don't pay them very much. But if you let them get too good, then you got to pay them a lot. And you get to the point where you're running a deficit almost every race. And it's the old adage, you know, the best way to make a small fortune in racing is to start with a large fortune. So it's very much that where like, I know now,
line.
Yeah,
excellent line.
I know now, like I've built up a war chest by winning a bunch of previous and lower level series. And now that I'm in the equivalent of F1 in that game, I'm losing $1 million a race and that's getting podiums regularly. So, you know, it's rough. But it's giving me exactly the challenge I want. The racing is fun to watch because it sort of, if you want to, it's sort of using a bit of a tilt shift look to it, which I love. The strategy in the racing is great. You feel like a genius when you enter a race and you know there's some weather coming, especially, and you know you take a chance on your strategy. And of course, you're managing at least two drivers every race, and you know you have like a fifth place car, but managing the strategy properly gets you onto the podium or even gets you the win, and you're just like, you feel amazing when that happens, and it happens a fair amount in that game if you're paying attention. Plus the different types of racing that's in there is great. You know, sometimes you're dealing with fuel, having to refuel the cars, so you kind of like measuring how much fuel you want to put in the car at the beginning of the race actually makes a difference. And there's actually an endurance mode where you're managing teams of drivers, like four drivers per car. It's just, there's a lot to it, but with all the depth that it has, it's just super simple to play and very easy to play. The transition they made to the Switch was really well done. I actually, another mobile racing management sim that I liked from years ago, which was I think it was called Racing Story. It was a Japanese game. It's part of a series of sim management sims, which I loved back there. That actually came to the Switch as well this year, but they didn't do anything with the controls, so it just really clunky to play. It wasn't fun at all. They actually, when they brought Motorsport Manager to the Switch, they took into account that you are using buttons and analog sticks now, and they adjusted everything accordingly. So again, another one that when I first started it on at the beginning of the year, I wouldn't have expected it would be in my top three racing games of the year, because I think it'd be more, you know, I'd rather be driving most of the time, but I just really, really enjoyed this. So Motorsport Manager for Switch is my number two.
Excellent. Dr. Ken, your number two racing game for 2019.
So my number two is Wreckfest. And the only thing I suppose I'd add about Wreckfest is that I picked this up in large part expecting to have some fun with my son, who's 7 years old, wrecking some cars, because I thought, you know, Demolition Derby style would be great. He loves getting in Burnout Paradise Remastered and tearing cars up. So, you know, a Demolition Derby game.
Please don't start that fight with Seward.
People can like whatever they want.
Please.
Yeah. But what I didn't expect from Wreckfest was the second best racing game of the year. The handling model in Wreckfest and the racing in Wreckfest is actually like really, really, really good. It does an incredible job of, for example, replicating the feeling of driving on different surfaces of road. Most of the tracks, as Greg and Pete alluded to, are a combination of kind of, you know, backyards and speedways and motorplexes and you know, racing circuits of all forms. And you're going through on a combination of dirt and concrete and bitumen and smooth asphalt and metal and all sorts of different surfaces and riding up on curbs and all sorts of stuff. And what this game does is it actually translates the experience of driving on those different surfaces really, really well, which adds to the immersion and the experience and the realism, which is very odd for a Demolition Derby game to be talking about realism, but it's actually a really grounded driving experience. The weight of the cars on those surfaces feels brilliant as well. This is an arcadey kind of game in terms of it, the wrapping around it and the conceit of it, but the actual driving physics of it is surprisingly well grounded, and I found myself actually enjoying the experience of actually racing far more than the wacky and zany crashing material, because keeping these cars that are you know, falling apart on balance while you're going over undulating hills and across different road surfaces, I just think it was absolutely fantastic, and I almost wanted it to be more of a racing game than a demolition game, because that's how good I found the actual driving experience to be.
Fabulous. Well, we'll stay with you, Dr. Ken. What's number one on your list for racing game of the year 2019?
The racing game for 2019, once again, is the F1 series. With no Forza this year, it's almost a vacated crown, but F1 continues to be the best racing game on the market. it does an incredible job replicating the craziness that is F1. I do think that this is not one of the best F1s that they've produced. I think that last year's game is better for a number of reasons, principally because I didn't like the things that it introduced. So one of the things I suppose that many sports games have been doing is introducing a story mode. F1 2019 does that through a very short introductory session when you're racing in the feeder series to F1. It introduces two fake drivers who become your sort of allies and competitors or for the first season in F1, or at least presents them to be your allies and challenges for the upcoming season, but actually doesn't do much with them. Essentially, you get a whole series of animated cutscenes that introduce these particular drivers, these fake drivers, and then for the rest of the actual season, all you do is get text messages from them, or they relayed emails to you via your agent. And so it actually doesn't do anything with its story mode. The other part too is that the presentation of these characters is completely preposterous. They're so cartoony, comic villain esque that the Devon Butler should be having a mustache and twirling it constantly and putting maidens on train lines. He's that devious. But the actual core racing of F1 remains very, very high quality. It dipped into online this year a bit. It's certainly online and esports is a focus with that. They have introduced a whole range of microtransactions associated with a livery editor, so you can paint your car various colors, but it has to conform with a series of stock templates that they've put together, or that if you actually want something that actually looks good, then you've got to dip into your wallet to actually pay for something that, frankly, no one will see because everyone in online crashes anyway. That said, I'm a little bit down on this game, but I put a couple of hundred hours on Xbox One. It remains on track, a fantastic racing experience. I'm very interested to see what they do next year, whether they actually attempt to put something out for new consoles as well as the existing ones. They moved to an August release date this year, and that earlier actually I think maybe earlier than August, but the earlier release time frame means they probably will actually have to put an F1 game out for both the existing consoles and whatever new consoles exist. So we'll see where they take it there. But again, if you love racing and aren't playing F1, then you really need to go down and play F1.
Very good. So Greg, I have a feeling that your number one is going to be Dr. Ken's number one.
Yes. Yes, it is. I have to echo pretty much everything Dr. Ken said. I was really excited about F2 being added this year. I found that outside of the opening story mode stuff, I've never touched it again. I tried racing it once, but those cars are so different. They handle so differently to the F1 cars that I just couldn't get a handle on them at all.
They're harder to drive.
They are. It's weird. It's so strange to step down to a feeder series and have everything be way more difficult. I mean, I'm sure that's very true to life because those cars are, they don't have all the bells and whistles and all the downforce and all the power that F1 cars have, but it feels weird in a video game sense. That being said, yeah, so I'm a big fan of this year. I feel that the game drives beautifully, as it always does. I do like the tweaks that they made to the handling this year. I feel like it feels even better. I love the story aspect. I'm a big fan of story in sports games, and I think they handled it quite well. I do agree, though, with what Dr. Ken said. Devon Butler is, like, cartoonishly evil. Although it's funny because as the story progresses, he's just a bit arrogant, which, let's be honest, most F1 drivers are. But it falls apart after that. It's cool that they put you in these different scenarios to place you in the beginning of the game, but then it's very much last year's career mode. after that. Although I do find this year that moving up through the ranks and renegotiating contracts happens way more frequently, which I think is good for the expediency of the game itself, because one of the issues that F1 games have always had is that you kind of get stuck in the season. The season is rather long. So it's nice to have the ability to move around. But I found, too, because of the way the story mode worked, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think your rival, Devin Butler, at least in my game, he signed with Mercedes. So when I went to negotiate a contract, I'm like, well, I'm not, because normally in these games, I would start at like the worst team. Like I would have started at Williams or something like that. But it's like, he's my rival. I'm not starting at the back of the grid when he's up there racing with the best car on the grid. Like that feels ridiculous to me. It didn't feed into the story that they'd built. So I signed with Red Bull. But I found with this game this year, with the way that you can develop the car, I developed the Red Bull into the best car in the field in about 5 races. And the competition is kind of gone at that point. Although being in Red Bull, Verstappen is clearly one of the highest rated drivers in the game, and he gives a good fight. So I find that a lot of my races now are me fighting with Verstappen, which I'm not totally against. But I would much rather be fighting, you know, with Ferrari and Mercedes at the same time. So I found that as I get into I'm about 2/3 of the way through my season, and I found that as I've gotten this far, it's really down to me and Max Verstappen fighting for the championship, which is not really what I look for in these games. I love how the game feels. I like that they tried to add a story mode. I think they largely succeeded at the beginning of it, and then it falls apart halfway through the first season, which is too bad. But that being said, the action itself, and I do like racing online. I found that in general, the quality of racer that I found online has been quite good. So I still love everything about it. It's still by default my favorite racing game every year. I've never been disappointed. I haven't been disappointed with the Codemasters F1 game in a long, long time. So it's still excuse me, it's still sitting there at number one.
The fact that drivers can change teams this year was a pretty awesome addition. So I think by the end of my first season, Kimi Raikkonen had moved to Williams. Sergio Perez was taken in as part of the Red Bull program and was driving for Toro Rosso. All sorts of different combinations can occur, and it certainly added a layer of change between seasons that hadn't existed in previous games. The only other, I suppose, the problem I suppose I had with our two fictional drivers was that this year saw in the real sport saw a crop of new drivers come in who have amazing personalities. So Lando Norris and George Russell and Alex Albon brought a real breath of fresh air to the sport, and a kind of, you know, embracing meme culture and social media, and it seemed like really good guys and fierce competitors. And you know, the F1 game can't know that this is going to happen, but it would be they brought such life to it, and the game does an awesome job creating the on track life, but they're still struggling with replicating what it actually feels like to be at a paddock, to be the whole paparazzi experience, the whole off track experience is something that game is struggling to recreate.
It doesn't help that their character models are terrible.
Yes.
They look foolish. I feel bad. They actually don't look bad when they don't move. As soon as they move, it falls apart. And they're still using the same canned animations on the grid that they have been for 5 or 6 years now. So, you know, it's weird. I think it's funny because every year we talk about these games, and every year we rave about they're our number ones and we love them, and all we do is talk about the things we don't like. But that's how good the game is, in that, you know, you're calling out the stuff you don't like because everything else is so good. You know, but yeah, I agree. It's the pageantry isn't there. They kind of took it as far as they have taken it 5 or 6 years ago, and it's kind of sitting there. And I don't know what you do with that, because, you know, you run the risk of, well, I mean, we see what they've done with Devin Butler. You run the risk of making them feel like cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you put words in their mouths. So,
yeah. The only other observations I'd make about F1 this year was that the Senna-Prost, I suppose, add-on, which was, you know, a for sale add-on, was mm-hmm. very, very disappointing. Because it didn't utilize the incredible legacy that those two drivers have left. And the second part is that just as the thing that bothered me most about F1 this year was that in the opening cinematic to the first Grand Prix at Melbourne, you get an image of an ocean-going yacht moored in Albert Park. Albert Park Lake doesn't actually go to the sea and has about a maximum depth of approximately 1.5 meters. And I don't know where that yacht is going. But anyway,
nowhere.
That bothers me every single time the Albert Park track loads up, because it's there. And I look at it and go, there is no way that you fit a yacht in Albert Park. But anyway.
At the risk of making this go longer, because I know Rich wants to move on, but you brought up a good point there with Senna and Prost. In that add-on, I agree. They've sort of left it at having these cars and having these helmet designs are enough, which they aren't. And I've said for years, and I think we've talked about this in previous years on this show, that it would be nice to see them really dive into the history of F1. And it seems like this new ownership group keeps flirting with that anyway. So I'm hoping that maybe that'll be a thing. I've said before that I'd like to see sort of classic versions of even current tracks. And now I think we're going back to Zandvoort again next season, which is nice, but it's an updated layout. But I'd love to see, like, you know, we have Hockenheim in the game. I'd love to see the old Hockenheim in there. I'd love to be able to take a current car around the big track.
Next year, we won't have Hockenheim, which True. Is sad.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying, right? And I think they could even take it a step further. And this is what you reminded me of, like when you talk about Prost and Senna, and they had a classic rivalry, and there were moments, you know, like there was Senna at Monaco crashing out at Monaco in the lead. There was obviously the two crashes at Suzuka. It reminds me of the F1 game that Sega made for the Sega CD back in the 90s, Beyond the Limit, where they had a whole game mode that was nothing but moments like that. And they actually touched on that in this game this year, with the story mode at the beginning, where they put you in those situations where it's like your tires are worn. There's three laps left in the race. Butler's pitted and he's coming at you at like 2 seconds a lap. You're going to try to hold him off. You're going to try to pit and win, that sort of thing. In that game, there was a whole game mode that was built on those moments, historic moments they were short little like 5 or 6 lap events. They could do that with their games, and I think that would be a great next step. They've mastered the career mode, more or less. They've mastered the season mode. The online racing is great. That would be the thing I think that could push this game, even this series, even further.
Yeah,
Pete, your number one racing game for 2019.
My number one racing game for 2019 is Need for Speed, which is a nice. Shock to me. I've always been a fan of the Need for Speed games, but Need for Speed to me has been a title that has just gotten worse and worse and worse, probably for like 5 or 6 editions now. And this year they tried a couple new things, and the things that they added really worked for me. It's still a modern Need for Speed in that it's open world and you're building up your racer, and there's story bits that are really cheesy and horribly produced, and all of that. But the gameplay is good. It's not amazing. It's not top tier, but it's good enough. What they added to the open world, though, is having like a day and night cycle, and what happens in each is very different. So during the day is your normal races, and the normal races are on courses in the open world, but they're sort of closed off. And it's like official races, you know, it's the legit stuff. And that's how you make your money. And then at night, it's all street races. And in the street races, that's how you get your rep. And rep is basically just another currency like money. And once you get enough rep, you can then buy different unlocks and whatnot. So it's basically like you're leveling up at night and then you're earning money during the day to buy new cars or to buy upgrades for cars and whatnot. And then added to that in the night races, is being street races is when the police get involved. And if the police catch you, all of the rep that you, or not all of the rep, but a portion of the rep that you've earned in during that, during your session will get removed. So it ratchets up the tension, which is not really a thing that you experience much in racing games. I mean, there's the tension of racing, of course, but like the tension of getting caught by the cops, or, you know, especially like between races, is not something you particularly worry about. But you don't like, and the longer you stay out at night, you get a bigger multiplier. So if you do like 2, 3, 4, 5 races, you're getting more and more and more rep. But the longer you stay out also, the more that will get taken away from you. So it's this whole risk reward thing that's very, very intense. And I really loved that loop a lot of having a really good run at night, leveling up, going back to the daytime, finishing 2 or 3 races, taking that money, buying all of the upgrades that are available to me because of all the rep that I'd earned the night before, and then going back and trying to get even more rep now with my new car with good upgrades and whatnot. It's a very, very cool system. I found it addictive. It needs some tweaking still, even a couple or a month than almost 2 months after release. It needs a little bit of tweaking. The police can be a little bit too much sometimes, which has been an issue with that game forever. And I do wish that, like I said, the racing's fine, but it would be cool if it was better than fine. These guys seem to like, they do the same thing as Grid, where it's mostly arcade, but kind of sim, but it doesn't really nail either of them. All that great, but it sure is fun. And I haven't had a ton of fun with a Need for Speed game probably since the first one that came out this gen. I thought was pretty good, and all of the ones since then have been pretty disappointing to me. So I thought that was really cool, and that was my number one. I also wanted to mention, anyone who is hearing about F1 from everyone else on this podcast, it is now available. F1 19 is available on PlayStation Now. So I just downloaded that like 2 or 3 days ago, and I was like, this is really cool, but the story's really dumb. And it's good to hear that was Dr. Ken's thing, saying that that's not a good part of the game. So maybe I'll stick with it for the other parts that are good, because that kind of turned me off. But
that's fine.
Yeah, so that's available on PS Now.
Very good. All right. Well, moving directly from the games of the year to the games of the decade. It's that time. This is going to be a lot of fun, because I think I'm going to be very interested to see how many of the individual games are the same and how many are different. Because when you talk about racing games of the decade, that's a lot of games and a long time between. You know, and obviously 10 years, but that just in video game years, 10 years it's about 64.3, if I have my calculations correct. That's a long time in video game time. So it'll be interesting to see how many are similar and how many are different. So again, let's just get right to it. We're going to start with you, Greg Seward. Number five, we're going 5-1 for racing games of the decade. Greg Seward, what is number five on your list for racing games of the decade?
I'm pretty sure this game made it in just under the wire, or by coming out in 2010. And my number five for the decade is Split Second, which got a re-release a couple years back, or at least was published on the newer consoles a couple years back. Split Second by Black Rock Studio, I believe they were called, which is unfortunately closed down after this game was released. Great arcade racer. There were so many things I loved about it. The online mode was very strong. This was back when Blur was out, I think the same year. This was back when they were really playing with the idea of putting the HUD on your car, which I thought was interesting. Clearly wasn't a success because you don't see it very often anymore. Although I think we were just talking about F1, it's funny because they're basically using the Halo now to do that on F1 broadcasts. But also your progression was on the car, which I thought was fantastic. That game, you would unlock decals for basically every time you got an in-game achievement, and it would be placed on your car. So when you went online, you could actually tell by sort of the level of experience of the racers you were racing against just by looking at their cars, which I thought was brilliant. That makes all the sense in the world to me. I'm kind of sad that that's not a thing 10 years later. And of course, the main thing about this game was the, I forget what they called the events, but they were very cinematic events that were track changing events. Like if you were, you would build up this meter that I forget what it was called through the race, and you could set off traps that would affect the cars around you and could affect you if you screwed it up. And some of them were as small as like a helicopter hovering over the course would drop an explosive barrel that would just push everyone around in different directions. And then they could be as big as there's a skyscraper just outside the track. And if you hit the button at the right time, that explodes, tips over, and now it's part of the track. The track has been completely changed. Or you're on a landing, part of the track runs through an airport and a plane lands and it changes the course, or it's literally landing while you're driving down a straightaway. Little things like that, they were always fun, especially online, because you could really screw each other over. And it kind of had that burnout feel that I loved, that arcade racing that I loved, but the competition felt completely different because of that. You weren't just trying to run people off the road or run people into solid objects. You were actually strategically trying to set off these different events during the race. So when it got re-released a couple years ago, I ended up sitting down playing through it again and fell in love with it all over again. So it's always been a crying shame that we've never been able to get a sequel to this because Disney shut down the studio almost immediately after the game was released.
And yet you still go to Disney World, Greg. Defend yourself.
Yeah, I can't. I got nothing. They have Star Wars at Disney World now. I got to go again.
Pete Dodd, number 5 on your list of racing game of the decade.
Well, first I'd like to point out that number 5 for most of the time that this list existed, which is this afternoon, was Split Second. And then at the last minute, I was like, I need a Forza. And I took Split Second off. So Split Second's my number 6. Such a good game. I do think that Split Second is better individually than Forza Horizon 3, which is my number 5. But I'm giving it to Forza Horizon 3 because it's my favorite Forza of the decade from either of the Forzas. I don't know. I get weird making lists. Sometimes it's about the individual game. Sometimes it's about the series. There's no consistency, and there's no consistency here. But Forza Horizon 3 was great. There's no denying that. As far as open world racers go, it was one of the best. The DLC for it was super imaginative and fun. The one that was like the toys,
the Hot Wheels.
Hot Wheels, yeah. That was incredible. The snowy mountain thing was cool. It wasn't as cool, but it was cool. There was just a ton to do in that game. I did feel like 4 was a step back. I just didn't have nearly as much fun with it, unfortunately. But yeah, Forza Horizon 3, to me was the best Forza of the decade with Forza, which one was it? The last Forza on the 360, coming in second.
Was that 7?
No, 7 was the most.
Oh, the 360. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay, it was 4.
Yeah. Yeah, with that one was also very close to unseating Forza Horizon 3 for me here, but I'm going to stick with it. Forza Horizon 3, number 5.
All right, very good. Dr. Ken, number 5 on your racing games of the decade, 2010 to 2019.
Number 5 is Dirt Rally. Dirt Rally 1.0, I suppose you could say, because we had Dirt Rally 2.0 earlier this year. I'm putting Dirt Rally on this list mainly because it made me realize how difficult it is driving rally cars in real life. Dirt Rally, obviously the dirt games have previously been quite arcadey, and I think that that had actually been going down in terms of quality. Dirt 3, particularly, I didn't enjoy with a lot of its Gymkhana exercises and things. And they Codemasters looked at it and went, we want to get back to the roots. We want to strip down all the different disciplines. We want to get rid of all the extra curricular stuff. We just want to make an amazing rally driving experience. And I think they did that with Dirt Rally. It is an incredibly difficult game. It is incredibly challenging. It is the type of game that, you know, you are going as quick as you can, and then you look at the speedo and you're going 40 k's an hour, and you're going, I'm going as quick as I can. How am I going at you know, 25 miles an hour on this road? I'm driving as quick as I can. But visually, it was an outstanding game. It's built on an incredible engine. You know, would I like it to be better? Would I like the career mode to be more developed and to actually feel better progression? Yes, but the actual driving experience of Dirt Rally made me learn a lot about rally driving, and I was uncomfortable the entire time that I was racing. And I think there's something to be said about being uncomfortable when you're driving fast, because that's really what driving fast is all about.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Ken, we're going to stay with you with number four.
Wait, can I throw something in real quick on just on top of that?
Of course.
If you haven't experienced Dirt Rally in VR also, because that is as intense, and on PSVR at least, is the only sort of sim racing that you can do in, well, that's not true. The Gran Turismo has like solo races, but it's absolutely incredible in VR.
So I haven't done Dirt Rally in VR, but I had a flu over the Christmas break and spent 2 days in completely nauseous, which would probably replicate my experience with doing Dirt Rally on
right.
VR.
The perfect.
That's exactly what we're looking for. Yep.
All right. Sticking with you for your number four racing game of the decade, 2010 to 2019, Dr. Ken.
Okay, so I'm going to cheat here, Rich, and I'm going to do number three and number four at the same time for me, because effectively
this is making me wildly uncomfortable, sir.
That this is good, because racing is about feeling wildly uncomfortable. I'm struggling to separate these two games out, and effectively they are to me the pinnacles of their respective franchise. It's Forza Motorsport 4 and Forza Motorsport 6. So to me, Forza Motorsport 4 is the best of the motorsports on the 360, and Forza 6 being the best ones on the Xbox One. And to me, they're almost the same game. They're just the pinnacle of where those two particular forms of track racing simulations got to on their respective consoles. You know, you can talk about the incredible listing of cars that they had, the very, very solid number of tracks that they had, the presentation, the experience. To me, you know, Forza Motorsport managed to make simulation racing accessible to people. They did it through, you know, the various aids that they could bring in. So your driving lines, your adjustable assists, the rewinds. But essentially,
they brought in me. I'm that guy. Yeah. I love racing games, but I was never good at Gran Turismo, never good at simulation racing games, and Forza gets me, and I love it for that.
And one of the reasons for that is that, you know, these cars feel the way that they should. And so when you're driving a little Honda Civic or a little Toyota and everything like that, it's manageable because it's similar to the road experience that you've taken. It's just a matter of escalating up to the next level, the next level, the next level. And then at some point you're driving a, you know, a TRV at 400 kilometers an hour down a straight. The Ford Motorsport series to me is the pinnacle of where, you know, racing games got to in terms of cross genre of racing and cross different forms of motorsport. And I I really, really enjoyed both Forza Motorsport 4 and 6. I thought 5 was like obviously the one where they went to the next set of consoles and was a disappointment. I thought 7, they lost their way. I'm really glad that they took a year off this year. And I'm hoping that, you know, obviously with the new consoles going forward, that they go away and they dream it all up again and they find a way to make what I think is actually my favorite type of racing, which is circuit racing. A way to make that awesome again. Because, you know, I there is no more of Forza 6 for me to play. I actually looked over the Christmas break this year, I've done all the races. I've got all the cars that I could ever want in that. To use that Pokemon analogy, I caught them all. I'm hanging for a really good track racing game. And one that is almost as good as Forza again.
Very good. That is an allowable segment right there. Just so you know, the judges have conferred and that is allowable. All right, Pete, you're number four. Your number four racing game of the decade, 2010 to 2019.
My number four racing game of the decade is controversial to myself, but I put it there and I'm sticking with it. And that is, it's Test Drive Unlimited 2.
What?
That's
great.
I loved this game. This game was broken. It came out in 2011, and I love Test Drive Unlimited. Test Drive Unlimited, I don't know if it was the first open world racing game. It's the first one I really remember spending a lot of time with. And then Test Drive Unlimited 2 kind of blew it out, and it had these things that just didn't exist at that point in time. Like buying and collecting cars was a thing that existed, but you could buy houses around the world. Like it felt really sort of inspired by like GTAs, even though it was a racing game. So it was like I was buying houses that I didn't need. And I got really, really, really hooked on this game. I got so hooked on the game that and I played so much of it that I know how bad of a game it is. I know how glitchy it is. I know how bad the servers were. Like I would just sign on every night with my fingers crossed that I'd stay connected for more than an hour. And it had so many problems, but looking back on it, it's like I played hundreds of hours of this game. I was completely hooked on it, and that has to be good. It always cracks me up, sidebar, on Steam reviews, when you see somebody who has like 850 hours in a game and they give it a thumbs down. It's like, really? Like, I know the game's making you mad, but you played it for 850 hours. Give it a thumbs up, guy. So that's what I'm doing. I'm giving Test Drive Unlimited 2 a thumbs up, even though there was a million problems with it, but I was undoubtedly hooked on it. And it definitely, I mean, there wouldn't be a Forza Horizon. There wouldn't be the new Need for Speeds. There wouldn't be all, and maybe new Need for Speeds, there shouldn't be.
I was going to say, that's dubious praise, right.
It did all of that stuff first, so it gets props for that. As a trailblazer, and as you know, it was that they were never a huge studio. It was bound to be rocky trying to do something so big in scope. I actually tried to fire it up earlier in the year. The servers are down. You can't play it at all. It's a bummer. But number four, Test Drive Unlimited 2.
So for those playing at home, we now have in the top five racing games of the decade, a game published by Atari.
Yes.
Works for me.
I was going to say, this is great.
All right. Greg Stewart, number four on your list, racing game of the decade.
Number four for me is Gran Turismo 6. And the reason it's Gran Turismo 6, I like Gran Turismo Sport for what it is, but it is not what I was looking for in a new Gran Turismo game. I get the whole esports thing, and they've been very successful with that. And actually, that is the game that got me to watch esports very soon after I very publicly said you'd have to be crazy to watch esports. But Gran Turismo 6 was the last and best of the old style GT games. 5 was kind of similar to this in that I think a lot of people didn't realize, and to this day probably don't realize, just how much Sony and Polyphony supported those games with constant content. And it's the same thing with Gran Turismo Sport. With Gran Turismo 6, though, they did so many things that I absolutely loved.
Gran Turismo 6 came out on the PS3 after the PS4 launched, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so. If not, it was very close to the end. Gran Turismo 6, so on top of having still, in my mind, the best console racing physics you're going to find, and having tons of great tracks and having a ridiculous number of cars you would never ever, at least I would never ever drive every one of them. Great online racing. That was the last time I, strangely enough, even though Sport is mostly an online game, was the last time I really played a lot of Gran Turismo online was Gran Turismo 6. But one of the things that I adore about this game, and I'm looking back on it now and remembering how much I loved it, is that the added content later on, they had, I call it an episode that centered around Ayrton Senna's career. So when you downloaded it, you got a ton of video content about Senna, about his foundation. Because if you remember, actually, Gran Turismo 6 was sold in conjunction with his foundation. I think a lot of the proceeds actually went to his foundation in Brazil, where I think it was mostly major interviews with his sister at the time. But you raced in go-karts on, I think, his track in Brazil. You raced his Lotus, one of his Lotus cars. You raced a couple of his F1 cars as well. Then they also released something that I think they called Mario Andretti's First Love, which is literally you were racing the first car that Mario and his brother raced when they were kids, the car that they built themselves, went out and lied about their names and their ages so that their father wouldn't find out they were racing and kill them. And won a bunch of races, and it was the beginning of Mario, of a legend's career. And then they also had this series in there where they went to a bunch of different car manufacturers and had them build concept cars in the game that you could drive. And those were always not, they didn't just push those out as here's some content you can play. They pushed them out with full documentary style video of the creation of the cars. So there was just a ton of love poured into that game post-release that I still appreciate, and they have not matched since. Like I say, I like what they're doing with Sport, but it's not the same. So going back and looking through, and I knew there'd be a Gran Turismo game on this list, but Sport doesn't hold a candle to 6 as far as I'm concerned. Gran Turismo 6 was a love letter to racing fans. To cars.
Hearing this angers me because I never played Gran Turismo 6 because, Rich, you're right. It came out like 2 weeks after the PlayStation 4. Yeah. It was that close. And I'm one of those people that, like, I just closed the book on a gen when, like, I sold my PlayStation 3 to help pay for my PlayStation 4. And as we all know, there is no back compat. And I love the Gran Turismo series. There is a Gran Turismo on my list at some point. But I've never played 2 seconds of Gran Turismo 6 because of Sony's insane decision to not have it be cross-gen. I mean, I guess it already took long enough to get to that point. Hearing all of the stuff that it has and that it's the best one of the decade just makes me even more mad.
And I mean, that stuff was coming out
and at Sony.
That stuff was coming out well into the end of 2015.
Right.
Like it was like I say, and yeah, it's a shame because a lot of people don't even know that it happened. And right. It set the bar so high for a game like this and for, you know, what you could do with downloadable content in a game like this, which the whole reason the game exists is because it's a love letter to cars. I mean, the whole reason the game exists is because Kazunori Yamauchi loves cars and loves racing. And he wants this to be a love letter. And it really was. Like, I really felt like they came as close as they've ever come to the vision he had for the series. He said he had for the series years ago.
This is the game that has the moon buggy in it.
Yes, it was. That's right.
You drive on the moon.
You drive on the moon. I forgot about that.
It's awesome.
It's just crazy. And it was great. And it's a real shame that most people... And the same thing happened with Gran Turismo 5. A lot of people did not know about all the extra content they released for Gran Turismo 5. So, that places it number 4 on my list. I actually, sitting here gushing about it, I feel like I probably should have placed it even higher. But, that's my number 4.
That game was incomprehensible, though. I couldn't figure out what to do in that game. The UI was so difficult to navigate.
I agree with that, and that's something that series has always had a problem with, and I think Gran Turismo Sport is another example of that. The front end of that game is incomprehensible. But coming at it as a fan of the series, I muscled my way through that to find the meat, and I was glad I stuck with it because I was playing it 2 or 3 years into the release of the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, oh, I remember. Yeah. You talk about it every week on Player One. Yeah. It was awesome. All right, so we're sticking with you, Greg Seward. Number three, your three. I want to say numero tres here, but I'm crossing
yeah.
Podcast. Number three, your top number three racing game of the decade, 2010 to 2019.
So this is where I cheat a little bit because I didn't want this series to take up three slots on my top five. It's Forza Horizon 1 through 3. We're going to pretend 4 didn't happen.
So really, this is more of a smack at Forza Horizon 4 as opposed to praising 1 through 3, right?
No, not at all.
No,
No, but Forza Horizon, I mean, I'm a fan of the Forza series as well, the Forza Motorsport series. I've fallen a little out of love with it for a lot of the reasons that Dr. Ken mentioned. You know, I'd really love them to get back to kind of where they were when they peaked. Forza Horizon came out, 1, 2, and 3, but 1 in particular, and was the perfect medicine for everything I hated about open world racing games at the time. I feel like they perfected it by dumbing it down. They give you every bit of help you need to go. Just here's a giant sandbox that the mountains of Colorado in the first one. Go race, go crazy, race, have fun, you know, drive through fields and drive up mountains and do whatever you want. There are no police, so you never have to worry about a police chase. If you run into another car, yes, you'll come to a stop, but your car's not damaged. You don't have to fix it. You're not moving slower now. None of that stuff. And it was brilliant. It was great. It looked beautiful. It had a fantastic soundtrack. It was everything that I wanted in. I wanted open world racing games, but I wanted to not be handcuffed in those games by all the crap that slowed them down. And still slows them down. And then 2 built on that, 3 built on that. I think 2 was a few different European countries, 3 was in Australia. So you were getting some wildly different landscapes through all that as well. And like Pete said earlier, the DLC that they started releasing for some of those games, Blizzard Island, the Snowy Mountain one, the Hot Wheels DLC, all fantastic. I love those games from start to finish, all three of them. 4 didn't do it for me, but the first three in the series are I just call them all one beautiful game that sits at number 3 on my list.
Once again, the judges allow it. Well done, sir.
Appreciate that.
Pete Dodd, we're looking at you for your number 3 racing game of the decade, 2010 to 2019.
My number 3 is going back to 2010. And it was actually released 1 week away from Split Second. It was released 1 week earlier, or no, 1 week later than Split Second. And that is Blur. It's unfortunate that both of these games came out. They both were amazing, and they both
cannibalized each other.
They totally cannibalized each other, and both studios just sort of went kaput afterwards. I actually was a much bigger fan of Split Second when it first came out, but over time, Blur really stood out to me. I think that had to do with the online play. But like, I purposefully will not entertain like kart racers in racing game talk. I wasn't going to put Mario Kart on my list or anything like that, just as a personal decision, but Blur is pretty close to a kart racer, except you're in cars. I mean, obviously, there's lots of car games that have combat and whatnot. But for whatever reason, Blur felt like the marriage of an arcade racer and like a Mario Kart, more so than like a Twisted Metal or something like that. And it was so fun to play online. And in the summer of 2010, as I'll bring up with another game that I'm going to talk about, I was spending a lot of time, way too much time, as I tend to do online, on the Player One podcast forums. And we would have split second nights. We would have blur nights. And it was just so fun. So that was a huge reason why Blur sort of pulled ahead for me. I just found it to be a better multiplayer experience than split second. And we, like, at that point in time, like, we were young men back then, and we had more free time, and we played online games all the time together. It was just such a blast. I haven't played that game. I don't even know. Like, was it? I don't think it was online only. I wonder if it still even works. It may not even be playable in this day and age. It may not hold up. I have no idea. I haven't even played the game probably since 2012 or so. But man, my memories of that game were so good, and it was so fun. And yeah, my number three is Blur.
Excellent. All right, so Dr. Ken, you have already unveiled your number three, but luckily for you, it would have stuck with you for number two. So what is number two on your list of racing game of the decade, Dr. Ken?
So number two for me is the we talked about extensively with the game of the year and game of the years and racing games of the year in the past. It's F1. And if you wanted to take all the recent F1 games that have come out for the newest consoles, you can. My personal favorite is last year's F1 2018. This is my favorite sport. You know, some people love baseball, some people love basketball, some people like football or soccer. I love F1, and this game replicates the passion that I have for this sport. It translates the experience of what I think it must be like to drive these cars. I'll never know what it's like to drive these cars that are capable of you know, pulling 7 and 6 and 7 G's just going through a normal corner. It manages to what I would say is that it captures the speed of something like Wipeout, but with simulation-esque controls that you actually feel like you're in control of these things. It is motorsport racing and playing a game at such an elevated level, and I just love it. I think it is amazing the way that it makes the superhuman task of driving an F1 car become something that someone can do in a racing game. And I think they're awesome. And being able to translate my favorite sport translated in video game form so well is really awesome.
Fabulous. All right, we're swinging back to you, Pete Dodd. Your number two racing game of the decade, 2010 and 2019.
Going back to 2010 again, a very good year for me in racing games. MotorStorm Apocalypse. MotorStorm.
Oh, man. I forgot about that one.
Well, yeah, MotorStorm is one of, or if not my favorite racing game series ever. And MotorStorm Apocalypse, out of the three, may be my least favorite of the three, but that doesn't mean I dislike it in any way. It's like your least favorite child, I would assume. I don't have children.
Yeah, that's true.
It's
I'm just kidding.
It's
terrible.
It was so good, so funny. And fun, though. It changed things up in a major way in terms of the whole apocalypse theme. Basically had tracks that there was very sort of split secondy. There's something about 2010 that was all about tracks that were morphing in real time. But you would be, you know, like you're driving through an area that's having an earthquake, and there'd be things crumbling and new paths opening because of trees falling and stuff. And it never ceased to be amazing, and especially like, and I was very, very in on the fad of 3D TVs at that point in time.
I played through this entire game in 3D.
Me too. Me too. And the 3D in that game was incredible. I mean, so all of Sony's first party games were doing 3D stuff and doing it well, because they sold a Sony sold a 3D monitor, which that's actually what I used. I didn't have a TV. I had Sony's 3D monitor, and the 3D was so cool that there's this tornado level where the tornado is sort of sitting offshore off at sea, and it moves in like the second or third lap, and there's just stuff flying around, and in 3D it felt like it was flying at you. This game would be so good in VR. I don't know why it hasn't been ported up to PlayStation VR. It seems made for it, since it was kind of, I felt like it was designed around the 3D stuff. A lot of the apocalypse stuff felt like they intentionally were targeting what 3D TVs could do. But beyond that, it was still just an amazing MotorStorm game. I love the MotorStorm series because it's through and through an arcade racer, but the skill ceiling in that game was very, very high. And I was part of a group online that was obsessed with, like, we had like probably 7 of the 10 like top time trials, because it had time trial leaderboards for every track. We had 7 of the 10 people were all part of like this community, plus other people. It wasn't just 7 people, but like, you know, like 70% of the top racers were in this community talking to each other, showing each other what lines were the best. And we were playing this game at an extremely high level. And for an arcade racer, that's unheard of. You think you hear of things like that coming up around iRacing, around Gran Turismo, around Forza. You don't hear about that coming up around like an arcade racer. But the racing was that good that even though it was arcadey, it still just captured the essence of what makes a racing game incredible. MotorStorm Apocalypse, to me, even though it's probably the third best MotorStorm, maybe the second best, it's very close with the first one. It still is so much better than just about everything else, as far as I'm concerned.
Metacritic agrees with you that it was the third best MotorStorm, but it's interesting because that was the MotorStorm that I liked. I wasn't a fan of the first two. And to me, it felt like they'd really hit it there. And maybe it was because of the Player One community as well that I was kind of caught up in it.
Right.
Such a shame, though, that they weren't able to continue that series.
Yeah. Because
then they shifted to Drive Club and that fell apart and then Evolution closed. But
right.
Man, this is depressing. All these great games and all these studios closed like right after they were released.
Okay. Well, Greg, let's get to a happier place. Number two of a decade worth of amazing racing experiences. Greg Seward, what is the definitive, inarguable second best racing game in the decade, 2010 to 2019?
Dr. Kent took my answer. I feel the exact same way. I mean, I would say 2018 or 2019 is, if I have to pick one, it'd be one of those two. But the F1 series, this decade, top of my list every year, near the top of the list every year, if not number one, for all the reasons that Dr. Ken said. I mean, I adore Formula One. I grew up on stock car racing, and F1 was sort of in the background. As I've gotten older, I've definitely shifted my allegiances, and F1 is, I plan my week around watching the F1 race, during the season. So, and I just, they've captured it perfectly. And as we mentioned earlier in the episode, but, and Dr. Ken mentioned a little bit in passing, they've managed to capture the story of a Grand Prix, the in-race story of a Grand Prix, in that, when the game is firing and working the way it should, you are like, I don't know. It's so hard to describe, but it's telling you a story. Everything that you're doing, like the different strategies are so great. Managing everything that you can manage in that game really makes you feel, kind of like I said with Motorsport Manager earlier, makes you feel brilliant. Even when it's managing your fuel load and managing your engine modes and things like that, and sort of putting your strategy up against your rival's strategy, which I've been seeing a lot in this series, because I find that now that I'm in Red Bull racing against Verstappen in the current game, he's almost always on a completely different strategy than I am, but he's also the closest competitor I have on the track. So it's really fascinating to see if what he's doing is right or if what I'm doing is right. And you know, like just going out there and knowing that I'm actually a second faster than him, even though I'm way behind and I can see his rear wing a couple corners ahead and just running a race and being able to just inch ever closer, but also knowing that maybe I'm on softer tires and they're degrading faster. So, you know, even the gap that's closing, it's closing much slower as I get there. And am I going to have enough left to pass him when I get there? Like they've somehow managed to recreate what really happens in a Grand Prix so wonderfully out on the track. Everything else around it, whatever, you can let that go. Cause when the lights go out, the experience is perfect. And, so pick whatever one you want. They get better every year. And I cannot wait to see what they do with next year's game.
All right, Greg. So now the pressure is on the official, no doubt, absolute best racing game of the decade. Your number one is?
It's got to be Mario Kart 8.
Ooh.
After all that serious, like Gran Turismo and Forza Horizon and F1, Mario Kart 8 is just fun. It's the perfect Mario Kart. It's the culmination of everything in that series. All the good and all the bad. They've scrubbed it to just the good, as far as I'm concerned. Great online, amazing tracks. With Mario Kart 8, it feels so weird talking about this on this show. This feels weird, but it started to shift more of what I would call what Smash Brothers has become in fighting games for Nintendo. Mario Kart 8's done the same thing, where it's not about just the Mario franchise anymore. It's more about Nintendo in general. It's like playing a cartoon. My kids love it. I can play it with them. It's got great accessibility options so that even my youngest, who doesn't normally play video games, can get in there and play and compete and feel good about it. I just love it to death. I bought it on the Wii U. It was almost all I played on the Wii U at the end. First thing I bought for my Switch, and by far what I've played the most on the Switch as well. So it has to be Mario Kart 8. I want it to be like a NASCAR or an F1 or a Gran Turismo, but no, Mario Kart 8 is what I spent the most time with.
All right. Hey, that works.
And I know Pete wants to as well, but he's given himself a fake rule not to put a Kart game on.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, I obviously think Mario Kart 8 is an absolutely incredible game and like one of the best games of the decade in any genre. My whole problem with Mario Kart 8 in terms of racing games has everything to do with the fact that like industry analysts who are otherwise brilliant people, like Matt Piscatella or like Daniel Ahmad, they keep talking about how racing games are doing fine. And that's all on the back of Mario Kart 8 having sold like 20 million copies across the decade.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if you subtract Mario Kart 8 from racing games, it paints a much more dire picture of what's happening with racing games. So I feel like it's just, it's kind of hiding the fact that like this is a genre that's in trouble. I mean, and maybe we don't need to know it's in trouble, but I like to know what's actually happening with it. And, you know, in Forza game sales have been going down, though they'll say that Game Pass means it's not and whatever. Gran Turismo is the same. So that's why I was just like, it's a racing game, but it's not a racing game. You know, it's just weird saying, like, I would say the same thing for Smash. If people are like, fighting games are doing incredibly because of Smash, it's like, well, if Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat aren't doing good, but Smash is, then I don't feel like fighting games are doing well either. It's like Nintendo's its own thing. It's like not really a part of other genres.
I would agree with that.
It's weird. But yeah, so that's my weird take on that.
All right. Well, Pete, weird take taken, and not weird at all. What is your absolute, no doubt, best racing game of the decade? Fight you on it.
It was an easy choice for me. We're going back to 2010 again. Three games from 2010, one from 2011, by the way. Gran Turismo 5. I loved Gran Turismo 5. It sounds like Gran Turismo 6 was a better game, but like I said earlier, I didn't play it. Gran Turismo Sport is mostly a disappointment to me. Like I get what they're doing, and like I'm not mad at them about it, but it's not for me. So to me, everything that Stewart said about 6 is how I feel about 5. Like it's the last like great Gran Turismo that I played. Mm-hmm. And when Gran Turismo is great, it's one of my favorite games again across any genre. Like when I get into a Gran Turismo, I get into a Gran Turismo. And Gran Turismo 5, I was hooked on. I did every event in single player. And again, the Player One podcast community was incredible at the time. It is still incredible. It's
a great series. I was going through my YouTube channel, and a bunch of videos I have on there are videos, replays of our old Player One podcast race nights, and they were fantastic.
My memory of it is the first corner of every race is Indy, a.k.a. Rex, smashing into all of us, and all of us being like, screw you, Indy. And he'd be like, sorry, I didn't. Somebody.
No, no. Me. The only thing you got wrong there is he never apologized.
Oh, OK. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. All of us completely take whoever survived the first corner won each race. But it was like we used to have we had a racing league, with points and everything. That it was all pen and paper. It was all stuff we did ourselves. It wasn't built into the game, but it was so fun. And so I was doing that at night. I was doing the single player by myself during the days. I feel like even just the online thing, I felt like went on for a couple of years with us. A good Gran Turismo game, just like a good Forza game, just has that type of staying power where you're just where you're going to just stick with it. Like my game of the year this year, the Need for Speed is a month. It's a flash in the pan month, and then I'm done with it and I'll never return to it. You know, like Gran Turismo 5, I played for a good 3 or 4 years straight. And it's just completely on a different level to me. And I loved that game so much. That's why I'm disappointed in Sport. Like Sport is fine for what it is, but what it is not what I want. Yeah. Like I want Gran Turismo 5 again. And I want it prettier, or Gran Turismo 6. I've actually been thinking about picking up a PlayStation 3. And the idea of actually having a Gran Turismo game I haven't played is making me want to do that even more now, because it will be like a new release to me.
It's amazing that to this day they've not put that. It's not Gran Turismo 5 is not on PS Now.
No, it's not on PS Now. 5 or 6.
That's amazing. I feel like those
games would be massive. And you know what could be there too? There's so much licensing tied up in those games.
Exactly. That's what
it's
I was just
probably
say.
Not right. even worth it.
Yeah, like right. even like even yes. on the off chance that the PlayStation 5 finds a way to do backwards compatibility with the PlayStation 3, I have there's going to be a bunch of old games that don't appear on the digital store, and I'm assuming that's going to be one of them, because it's all stuff tied up with licenses, either car licenses or music licenses, and obviously in the Gran Turismo game they have 1,000 cars, so there's a lot of licenses that probably ran out.
I think it's telling from a licensing perspective that Forza Motorsport 7 isn't available on Game Pass.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, some of the licensing, I remember, to go off on a tangent here, covering Gran Turismo 3 in EGM back in the day. And actually, between the Japanese launch and the American launch, they had to shift some cars around because the licenses expired.
Right.
Like, that's how quickly it can happen.
Yeah. Right? It's a huge bummer for retro gaming and for backwards compatibility. Like I see a lot of people are just like, oh, if Sony just opened up their stores and they had Tony Hawk, and it's like, no, you won't get Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk was all licensed music.
Yeah.
Like it's just, there's like so many games had licenses that have run out, that even if they do have backwards compatibility, they can make the game available to people who put the disc in, but they can't sell it, you know, it's tricky. So I should probably just pick up a PS3. I was looking at them on Craigslist, and they're like $90 on Craigslist. So maybe I'll pick up a PS3 and Gran Turismo 6 and try to relive the early 2010s again.
Now, I'm not a hardware collector, but I do have a launch PS3 with backwards compatibility.
It still works?
It did the last time I tried it, which was only a couple months ago when the reason I tried it a couple months ago, talk about a tangent, was because my son wanted to try Portal 2 in motion again. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So, we booted up the launch Spider-Man curved top PS3. Strange machine. But I bet you those things aren't $90 in about 3 or 4 years. I bet you they're a lot more than $90 in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no, the ones with back compat, I think, are still like $225,
$250. Yeah, they're highly sought after.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because a lot of them don't work anymore.
Right.
Interesting. Well, all right. Pete, did you have anything more to say on that, or are you good with
that? Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Very good. All right, Dr. Ken, close us out. With the Greg is wrong and Pete.
I really hope it's Gran Turismo Sport.
Greg is wrong. Pete is wrong. Here's the real best racing game of the decade, 2010 to 2019.
I think it's great. I mean, the suggestions that Pete and Greg have made, because it's gone the full gamut of games. We had a kart racer that was an indie kart. We had a game published by Atari. We learned that 2010 was part of the decade. And in part just to prove that I do play non-licensed or, other racing games. In doing some prep here, one game that I wanted to mention that isn't number one, that I actually do think was really good, was Need for Speed Most Wanted 2012, which is the last great Need for Speed game. And as the podcast has been going along, I've been attempting to Google throughout to try and work out a way that I can convince Rich to allow Project Gotham Racing 3 to count in this decade, because to me that is the best racing game just about ever.
That's OG Xbox though, right?
Exactly. Yeah, no, that is 10 years off the allowable period.
That was a great game.
Kudos.
That was another game that came out so late, most people didn't play it.
Kudos were the best. Oh, I love I love the sound of collecting all those kudos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. You bottle it and sell it to me. My number one game simply is Forza Horizon 3. I think it's the best racing game that's ever made. It made me like a genre that it turns out I don't like. I actually don't like open world racing games. I've come to realize this now. Playing Need for Speed, the most recent one, for 8 hours last night, playing Forza Horizon 4, playing some of the previous test drive games, I don't actually like open world racing games. I find that the freedom to drive anywhere to be actually oddly unenjoyable. I actually don't like taking a supercar and driving it across a field and running through trees and vineyards and everything like that, because that loses a connection to me to reality. However, all that said, Forza Horizon 3 made me enjoy that. It was driving in my home. The fact that it perfectly translated what the country that I call home looks like. It is Australia, and the way that it captured the deserts and the fields and the oceans, everything like that. Would I have loved this game if it wasn't set in Australia? Probably not. Not the way that I actually really really have a kind of a fondness for this game. The chaos of the map, in terms of the number of races and the number of events, wasn't as bad as it was in later games, and it seemed to be easier to navigate than it was in Forza Horizon 2. The other thing I'd say about Forza Horizon 3 is that far more than other open world games that I played, it found a way to create amazing tracks out of the open world. So when you would actually go into a circuit race or a point-to-point race, the actual track or the actual circuit that it carved out for you in the landscape, I think, is second to none. And that is something that's really, really hard to do. It's easy to identify when it's done badly. When you're racing along and feel that this track isn't good, then that's hard. But when you're racing along in an open world environment and it doesn't feel like an open world environment. It feels like a track that they've made out of that open world environment. It actually makes it feel like a good track with good sequencing, with good straights and curves and corners and complexes that run into one another that create good racing. That is actually really, really, really hard. And I think it's something that actually the Need for Speed games secretly really struggle at in their layout. Forza Horizon 3 did that. The expansions, as everyone's alluded to, were amazing. I think that the ending on Hot Wheels was just the perfect crescendo for what to me was all about racing and about being a kid and about loving cars. And, you know, let's have some jumps. Let's just take this as far as it can go. I didn't know how they would top it with Forza Horizon 4. I didn't think they actually ultimately did. So that, to me, is why Forza Horizon 3 is the best racing game of the decade.
That is fabulous, Dr. Ken. Fabulous. Great job, everybody. Dr. Ken, Pete Dodd, Greg Seward, you guys, we have spent almost this whole decade talking about racing games. I can think of no better way to start off a brand new one than doing it. What do you say we keep on doing this? Every year, best racing game, and then every 10 years or so, we cap another decade. What do you say? You in for another 10?
I'm down.
That timeline works for me.
Fabulous.
Only if we find a way to get an Atari game back in the list.
Yeah.
Well, that's an Atari console. We're going to have a next-gen Forza to talk about next year, and isn't there supposedly an Atari console coming out? Yeah, maybe they have a racing game.
Hey, we could get an Intellivision game in next year, too.
Well, you know, one thing we know for sure, whatever comes out this year in 2020, will at least three of them will be on Pete's list for Game of the Decade 2020 to 2029.
Yes, for sure.
All right. Well, again, thank you guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Before we go, Greg Seward from the Player One podcast, from Generation 16, from all sorts of different places. Where can people find what you're doing out there on the internet, sir?
You can excuse me. You can find me at www.playeronepodcast.com every week. You can find me on YouTube at Generation 16 with my historical Sega series, and you can find me on twitch.tv/Seward every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, playing old video games. And if you just want to chat on Twitter, at Seward.
Thank you, sir. Pete Dodd, where can people follow you and find all of the good stuff that you're doing on the internet, sir?
Well, I have a podcast called The Doddcast that I do with you, Rich, and our friend Mark. It was the first Doddcast, but at this point in time, there's three Doddcasts now, which is aggravating to me. So if you Google it, look for the one that looks like it's about video games. Only one of them is about video games.
Man, you are prolific.
Otherwise, I stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/FamousMortimer, and you can find me on Twitter at Pete Dodd.
Very good. Dr. Ken, where can people listen to the things that you're saying and watch the things that you're doing on the internet, sir?
I don't know. If there's a webcam pointed at my house, I'm normally watering my lawn between 6:30 and 7:30 most evenings. That's probably the best place to see me. That's definitely it. Just watch me in my house while I sleep. That's what I prefer.
Good stuff. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of the Press Row podcast community. We appreciate it very much. Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Greg. You guys are fantastic, as always, bringing such great stuff to the show. And we'll be back soon, and looking forward to a fantastic 2020.